I turned on my phone yesterday afternoon to find a tweet circulating that, about a Fly Safair plane and how Gauteng rescue crews were on standby for an emergency landing at OR Tambo International. It was all sounding terribly dramatic and scary. By now, you probably already know that everything went smoothly. The plane landed safely. There were no injuries, no deaths, no fireworks or explosions of any kind. And yet, despite that, my social media feeds, anyway, are still abuzz with theories about what went wrong and how the situation was handled and why the plane turned back to Joburg instead of carrying on to Cape Town. And I just thought, let's try and get to the crux of the matter today and hear from the airline itself what actually happened. Very happy to have with us on the line Kirby Gordon, who is the Chief Marketing Officer for Fly Safair. And Kirby, thanks for your time this afternoon. I'm sure you're fielding lots of calls like this one, so we do appreciate you joining us.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, Pepper.
Sure. It was a Joburg to Cape Town flight, FA212, taking off just after 11:30. What happened next?
That's correct, yeah. On takeoff, everything felt quite normal to the passengers and to the crew that were managing the flight. But during the takeoff roll, one of the wheels on one of the rear struts came adrift. You'll keep in mind, of course, that there are two, so it was just the one that came adrift. And it was witnessed on the ground by the safety teams that obviously monitored the takeoffs from an external perspective, which was then reported to the crew. From there on out, we needed to deal with the situation. So we did a couple of things. Mm-hmm. The crew need to circle for a while in order to burn off excess fuel. The reason being is that it's much safer to land off with a lighter load.
Yeah.
And modern Boeing aircraft don't have the sort of thing that we've always seen in the movies where they dump fuel and jettison it out. You actually have to burn the fuel off by effectively circling. So they did that for a little bit. They did a low pass inspection on the remaining wheel, mm-hmm. which looked good. And then eventually, after they burnt off enough over Centurion, they circled in a second location. They came in and performed a great landing, a really smooth landing, and the rest is history.
So Kirby, I mean, it all sounds very, very highly managed, and it sounds like there were clear protocols in place that kicked in and were followed, and the end result was all on the ground safely. The people are questioning, I think, procedures that perhaps they don't understand. For example, why turn the flight back to Johannesburg? If you needed to burn off the fuel, why not do that flying on to Cape Town and land on the other end and get your passengers there on time as well? Would you like to explain why you had to turn back to Joburg?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, look, the reality is that there are, you know, machines are not ultimately infallible, and obviously they're designed in order for us to be able to cope with these kinds of situations, and naturally we train our crews in order to be able to do these sorts of things. So the standard protocol in any kind of situation like this is not to deviate too far from the airfield. The reality is that you've already got a specific situation on board, so you want to be available and close to an airfield in case anything else happens. And the reality is that it's better to have had that additional fuel to be able to play with so that they could effectively do the flypasts, do all those sorts of things around Johannesburg without necessarily getting to the sort of end of Cape Town with less there. So it's really just standard process in any aviation disaster to stick to the closest airfield. Mm-hmm. If it had been halfway along, if it had been initially halfway along, they might have stuck to Bloemfontein, for example.
Right.
So that's really the standard protocol in that regard. But there are a number of other practical issues as well. I mean, the landing did mean that they had to close one of the runways at OR Tambo for about 30 minutes. In Cape Town, they only have the one runway, so that would have blocked all traffic in and out of Cape Town.
Right.
But mostly it's just standard procedure to stick to the closest airfield and to stay close to an airport, effectively.
Okay, thank you. One of our listeners asking if you can elaborate on what you mean by the wheel came adrift. If you can picture an aircraft, you can picture the two sets of tires. So as you've explained, it was just the one that came adrift, Kirby, but do we know exactly what happened or what caused it to come adrift? And do you want to just explain a little bit more what actually happened?
Sure. I mean, we actually don't have any of the details of it at this point.
Okay.
What happens from here on out is that the airline ourselves, and obviously in close conjunction with the Civil Aviation Authority, conduct a full forensic investigation on it. So they've recovered all of the wheel itself and the bits and pieces, and that now goes through an entire forensic process where they x-ray it, they look at the metals, they make determinations about what could have been, whether it was something to do with the aircraft, whether there was something on the runway, whether there was something on the runway when it landed. You know, there are so many variable factors that can come into the equation to decide that. So that's a really thorough process. It does take a little bit of time, but it really is something that the guys look into in an incredible amount of detail, obviously so we can understand what happened, and mostly so that the kind of greater aviation community can be informed about any, you know, particular risks that might be there to avoid any future incidents.
Kirby, I think some of the sort of sensationalising that you've seen happening on social media is because of the fact that it was a Boeing plane. And we all know that there have been eyes on Boeing and a lot of sort of scrutiny on Boeing due to a couple of other safety incidents on larger airplane more recently. So I think perhaps it's natural that people would speculate. For the record, do you want to just tell us how old the plane was and what sort of maintenance and checks and balances had been carried out, that there was nothing there that was untoward?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, I think the reality is people are, you know, there is a lot of conversation around Boeing at the moment. And I think what's important is to put into context the difference between our aircraft and the Boeing aircraft that are really making the news at the moment. So yeah. The ones that are really being spoken about quite frequently is the Boeing 737 MAX, which is the latest generation of 737 aircraft that Boeing have been producing. They've now stopped production on the previous generation, which was called, ironically, now that it's no longer the new generation, it's called the new generation, but actually it's the old generation. And these are the ones that we operate now still to this day. They are possibly one of the most popular aircraft in the world. They are thousands and thousands and thousands of them in the air at any given moment all around the world. I mean, they're probably they would largely be described as the workhorses of modern aviation. And they are a little bit different to, well, they are quite different to the MAXs that are the ones that have been the subject of obviously some redesign and clearly a few issues in that process that has had Boeing in the news so much.
Okay, but so thanks. So a different kind of airplane and one that's been part of your fleet and in good working order. So Kirby, obviously you've said a lot of investigation still needs to be done to look into the possible cause of this incident. I would imagine it must have been scary for some of the people on the plane. Nobody likes to be told your flight's turning around and nobody likes to hear that there was something wrong. Obviously that makes for a fairly tense couple of hours for the passengers who were on board. Once everybody was safely back on land, did you need to offer anything in the way of sort of trauma counselling or special assistance to anybody who'd found that process particularly terrifying?
Spiffer, we always make that available. Obviously, you know, we concede that, you know, flying is quite frightening for a lot of people. You have sort of a natural phobia of it anyway. Yeah. Never mind if anything else that's sort of irregular does happen. So we always do make that facility available. But the reality is that it was actually really well handled by the crews up in the sky. You know, we've seen footage and stuff from within the aircraft itself. The guys had a great control and handle over the situation. And it's really, really fantastic that actually so many of the passengers were so compliant. You know, I mean, the reality is an additional level of danger can be brought untoward if people start panicking and things go awry. Whereas what we actually witnessed was partly due to the fact that the cabin attendants were able to kind of command the control of the people on board. But people were really compliant and they just gave them the space to do all the work that they needed to do. You know, they accepted all of the instructions that were required along the way. I think the captain was really great in terms of just communicating to folks about what was going on, what the expectations were and what they were looking for. The reality is aircraft like these are designed to be able to land on three wheels. They can land on two wheels, actually. So, you know, the imminent danger was actually relatively little, and I think that they did well to contextualize that. So all in all, we've had nothing but compliments, to be fair, from the passengers on board, and seemingly little by way of need to actually intervene afterwards.
Kirby, thank you so much for clarifying all of that. And yeah, I think to add to that, well done to the crew for managing the situation and obviously getting everybody safely back on the ground, the most important thing. But it sounds like they really followed the procedures to the book and did so in a very controlled and calm manner, which were then passed on to the passengers. So appreciate that and well done to them. Kirby Gordon, thanks for very much. And I hope obviously that you'll keep everyone posted when you do determine the cause of the incident. I think it would be reassuring to the public to be told as much as they can be. Is that something you'll be able to do you think?
Absolutely. But I mean, from these points, the standard process is that the investigations actually get managed largely by the Civil Aviation Authority, and they make all of their reports public at the end of the day. So we'll work in conjunction with them on that basis. But yes, thank you for your compliments, and we're very proud of the crew.
Kirby Gordon, thank you for chatting to us. Kirby is the Chief Marketing Officer for Fly Safair. And because I know that there is a lot of speculation and people who are distrustful of information that comes from the company itself, I'm going to add one last question to this interview to another expert who's been listening in, aviation expert Lyndon Burns, the editor of Plane Talking. I asked him just to listen to my interview and Kirby and answer a very simple question. Lyndon, it's always lovely to have you on the show. You've just listened to Kirby's discussion of what happened and how the procedures kicked into place and how the situation was dealt with. Did anything in that conversation alarm you, or did it sound to you like standard protocols kicked in and were followed to the book?
No, I think it's absolutely, you know, the crew, pilots are trained for these eventualities. You know, they go through rigorous training. When I say rigorous, every 6 months they are put in the hot box in the simulator, and they have to demonstrate their competency with all sorts of curveballs thrown at them, all sorts of, you know, things that you probably couldn't conceive, as well as the emergencies you could conceive of.
Yeah.
And they have to demonstrate that they are not just familiar with the aeroplane, but with all of the procedures, that they know, you know, what to do and how to execute and manage the situation. And they do that calmly and professionally, and there are two of them in front there, and they've got a series of checklists that they work through. And as Kirby was alluding to, you know, the aircraft are designed, big commercial jetliners that operated by airlines are designed with a high degree of redundancy specifically for safety.
Yeah.
So you've actually got six wheels on a 737, two main left-hand side, two main right-hand side, and two smaller ones under the nose. And it was one of the two on the left-hand side that detached from the aircraft.
Right.
The Civil Aviation Authority apparently already began their investigation yesterday. Typically, it can take up to 9 months to a year before the final report is published. They'll publish. They're obliged within 30 days to publish a preliminary report, which is really just a catalogue of the evidence. So, what was the weather? How old was the aircraft? How many hours on it since maintenance? That sort of thing. And then they'll do, through a process of elimination, their investigation. But I think the way it was handled, absolutely by the book, nothing in there that would have struck me as being unusual. And I think a lot of people also, just to answer your question you put to Kirby about why did the aircraft not continue to Cape Town, there's another important factor that Kirby, I think, omitted to mention, and that is that the airline would have, because Johannesburg is its main base, they would have had most of its resources at OR Tambo.
Yes.
And so, you know, all of the personnel they needed, that far less resource at Cape Town. Now, it probably would have been a different consideration if the aircraft had been going in the other direction, departing from Cape Town, heading to Joburg. That said, depending on the nature of the event, you know, the one thing we learn as pilots is, you know, aviate, navigate, communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So keep control of the aircraft. And if you can, depending on the nature of the emergency that you've got, try and land the aircraft at the nearest available runway.
So
that would have come into play as well. But I think, you know, one shouldn't underestimate also the fact that, you know, they've got all of that resource at Johannesburg as well. Yeah.
Lyndon, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that. I just think always helpful to have a neutral third party set of eyes on the situation, confirming what the FlySafair representative has already told us. I hope that allays some of the hysteria. Let's call it what it was. I saw some absolutely extraordinary conspiratorial tweets this morning about how it had been handled. And I just thought, no, let's just have a bit of a reality check. Appreciate the insight there, Lyndon, into the pilot trailing aspect as well, and the degree of competency required to manage situations like this.